City Sport Pods.
We turned up pre-season thinking we'll beat Man United.
Blackburn really grasped the opportunity of what the Premier League could do.
We're a band of brothers.
Welcome back to the Premier League Storybook with me, Jake Humphrey. It's time for Chapter 2, The House That Jack Built. In our first chapter, we heard how Alex Ferguson and Manchester United claimed the first Premier League title and went on to dominate the 90s. There was no one in those early years who could touch them, except that is Blackburn Rovers. Hold on, Blackburn Rovers? Their first Premier League season was their first in English football's top flight since 1966. However, steel magnate Jack Walker invested in his boyhood club in the early 90s, setting out on a mission to make Manchester United look cheap. They attracted Kenny Dalglish as manager and signed the cream of English football's best young talent, finishing fourth and second in their first seasons back at the top table. The best, however, was yet to come. We'll hear from striker Chris Sutton and their captain Tim Sherwood on one of the most incredible Premier League stories of all time. But first, last time on Premier League Storybook, we heard from Peter Schmeichel on United's dominance of the Premier League early years. So what did he think of these new upstarts?
With Blackburn, it was the first club that really, after us of course, really grasped the opportunity of what the Premier League could do. With Jack Walker investing in not only a new stadium, new facilities, but also in players, were brilliant to persuade players like Shearer in particular. But I mean, the team that he created was very good to come to Blackburn, which is something which I probably think could never happen again. But they created this incredible team, which we had some really great battles with them. And of course, one season they went one better than us, which was disappointing for us. It also, I think, it's what gives the Premier League life and makes it special that we have Blackburn coming up winning it, that we have Leicester coming up winning it, that it's not just Man United, Man City, Liverpool, and not just money. I mean, of course, at the time it was money because he persuaded players to come, but it was a quality team that he built, and they were hard to play again. You know, Chris Sutton and Alan Shearer was kind of my, I take it on a personal level, my nearest opponents in playing them. And they were difficult. They were quality in the way they played together. You got Tim in midfield. You got, oh my God, you got so many great players in that team. So it was a great team. It was some great battles we had.
Blackburn, Kenny Dalglish and Jack Walker were the names on everybody's lips as they hoovered up some of the most promising young English players in the game. Most impressive of all, however, was their capture of Alan Shearer. The Southampton striker was the hottest property in England when newly promoted Rovers bought him for an eye-watering £3.6 million in July 1992. Shearer soon became Blackburn's talisman, firing them up the table and keeping them there with his goals. Les Ferdinand, at QPR at the time, was watching on in awe.
I mean, my thoughts on him at Blackburn were, you know, listen, Alan was the best striker in the league at the time. You know, you had the likes of Alan, Andy Cole, you had Ian Wright, you had Teddy Sheringham, Matt Letizia. I think, you know, through that period, you know, Stan Bodemir, Robbie Fowler, you know, through my career, I had players the whole way that were inspirations that they'd score on a weekend. So I thought I needed to score. And, you know, you could guarantee most weekends that Alan was going to score. So to be spoken of in those circles, you needed to score as well, albeit I was at QPR and probably not as big a club as some of the other guys. But what I needed to do was to put myself in a position where, you know, I was being spoken about in the same breath as those guys.
Ferdinand later played with Shearer at Newcastle and has a better insight than most into just how good he was.
I think, you know, the thing that puts him a cut above is probably his goal-scoring record. You know, his determination. You know, I played with Alan, and the one thing I knew is anyone who played against him knew what they was coming up against. It was whether you could stop it or not. And nine times out of ten, they weren't able to stop him. So he was great to play with. You know, I've been really fortunate to play with some really good strikers in my time. And, you know, I've always said that Alan tops the tree. His ability to hold the ball up, his ability to spin into spaces. And like I said, his ability to shoot from absolutely anywhere. You know, he was good in the air, he was good on the ground. And, you know, just a complete centre forward at the time.
So they had the team in place and finished second as United romped to the double. But they had to go one better. Tim Sherwood had been a mainstay of the team ever since Kenny Dalglish took over in the old second division. While Chris Sutton broke the British transfer record to arrive at Ewood Park from Norwich that summer for £5 million, going on to form an unbelievable partnership with Alan Shearer. I sat down with the pair of them, captain and star striker, and they told me the remarkable story of Blackburn's rise to the top. Let's talk then, actually, about you, Tim, when you made the decision to join Blackburn. When you first went there, who was the person that you spoke with? Was it the manager? Was it Jack Walker? What was the first initial contact?
Dalglish. I mean, the initial contact came when I was on my way back from negotiations with Arthur Cox at Derby. So I went up to see Arthur and give him a handshake, agreed to join Derby County. On the way back on the train, I got a call from Kenny Dalglish to ask me to come to Blackburn. So now, obviously, that was the choice I wanted to make because they were building something up there. It was very exciting what he had to say to me. And I was in a predicament because I always felt like I was a man of my word, but I really wanted to go up there. So I was thinking, I put the phone down from Kenny. I said, well, I will definitely come up and we'll have the conversation. And within 15 minutes, Arthur Cox rings me back and he says, I understand you've had the big man on the phone. I said, yeah. I said, well, Kenny's rung me. He says, if you're my son, he said, I'll tell you to do the right thing and that would be to go to Blackburn. So we ended up beating him in the playoff semi-final. So it was a real sliding doors moment. It could have gone either way. Thankfully, we got the opportunity to join Blackburn and went up there and the rest is history. But it was all about Dalglish and selling me the project and what they're likely to do up there. What did he say?
Can you remember?
Well, just that they're going to make a lot of signings, a lot of quality. They're going to change the way they go about the business. They've got an owner in Jack Walker, who's the best owner he's ever seen and a great man. And I think Kenny was obviously that person. It was very difficult to pull the wool over his eyes. So whatever he said, I'm sure it was correct. And it turned out that way. I mean, he was the best owner. Kenny was the most successful manager I've had and a fantastic man. And he built a great coaching team, along with Ray Hartford, who come up there. And he already had Tony Parks. He kept him on side. When the players were coming in the door, I mean, them days, Jake, there was no transfer windows or financial fair play. So, I mean, I was part of the old guard, really, from the Championship. But every day, their clothes were getting taken out of the first team dressing room and a new one was coming in. I mean, it was a real, I would say, it could have got very toxic at one stage, you know, because it was like, well, the new boys are just coming in the door on bigger money. But there was a lot of the players in the Championship obviously got Blackburn to the Premier League in the first place, and some good lads and some good players. So it was every day, it was like a conveyor belt, you know, a different turnover of players. And it was exciting times, but Kenny was true to his word. He was going to shake it up and he weren't there for the long haul to do it. You know, if he didn't achieve it, progression straight away, then I think he was a man who would just say, you know, it's not for me. But we obviously finished fourth in the first year in the Premier League, and then second, and then eventually win it.
So you would have watched this from afar then, Chris, wouldn't you? You would have seen all these signings going to Blackburn and when you were at Norwich, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I always felt Blackburn were trying to build something special. And, you know, people would, you know, look at Jack Walker and the money which, you know, he spent on players. He was buying all the best young players around. I mean, the likes of Graham Lassoe had gone there, David Batty, Paul Warhurst, and the big one was Alan Shearer, of course. So it always felt to me like Blackburn were a club moving in the right direction. I always liked, you know, Jack Walker's motive as well for building the club. You know, you can question a lot of owners' motives in the Premier League today and what they're actually about. But Jack Walker was, you know, about giving something back to the town which he was brought up in. And he built the stadium, and then he wanted to build a team which townspeople could be proud of. And I think he did that. He put his money in. He got Kenny Dalglish in, who was probably Blackburn's most important signing because he had trust in Kenny to then build a team. And, you know, Tim's mentioned the promotion. And then it was pretty quick success. But, of course, it was about toppling a Manchester United team who, under Sir Alex Ferguson, were really formidable. And I played in the inaugural Premier League season for Norwich City, and we'd pushed Manchester United pretty close, but they were a cut above everybody else. But Blackburn were the team really sneaking up on them. And I remember that would have been the 93-94 season, Alan Shearer scoring two goals at Ewood Park and running Manchester United ragged. I remember that sort of registering with me, thinking, blimey, you know, maybe this Blackburn team can push Manchester United the following season. They were building something pretty special.
And you were in that sort of building period as well, Tim. I mean, Chris came just a little bit later. When did you first think, bloody hell, this could be a team that actually wins this thing?
Well, that season, what Chris is talking about there, the 93-94, before that, obviously the first season, you're dipping your toe in the water. You know, are we going to get on in the big league? Yes, we've made some signings. And to finish fourth was a great achievement. But not for Kenny. It felt like it was a little bit of a letdown. And he was continuing to build, sign some few more players. Then we finished second. So I would say to you, after we finished fourth, did we believe we'd go on and win the Premier League? Probably not. Probably not 100%. But certainly when we finished second in the year before we actually won it, we turned up pre-season thinking we'll beat Man United. We, like Chris talked about that game. I think that was very significant, that game, because, you know, even though it's one-off fixture, it was about them and us at that stage. And I'm sure Fergie was looking over his shoulder. You know, I'm not sure he was too scared, but certainly looking over his shoulder thinking, who are these turning up? You know, it looked like they really believe now. And certainly at the beginning of that season, we did, you know, and we obviously made some signings. Chris comes in. I remember Kenny asking me about Chris because I knew him from Norwich anyway. So I remember him saying to me, you know, what's he like as a character? You know, I told a few lies to get him in the door. we just needed it. I mean, we had lots of strikers, but it's all about scoring the goals, you know. And in the end, we were a team who were set up to play 4-4-2. We had Ripley and Wilcox on the wide areas. We had very good fullbacks as well. But we just needed them extra goals to help out Alan along the way, and Chris come in and did that. So it was about finding that extra bit, and then a couple of signings, what we made that season, I think they really helped us over the line.
I had no idea, Chris, that Tim was responsible for you winning the Premier League.
Well, there you go. I mean, I suppose Tim had to say some nice things about him, because I used to clean his boots and pick his dirty kit up at Norwich City. But Tim did give me a Christmas bonus one year, which Ian Butterworth never did. And he was, you know, an experienced type. So I always quite liked him. I knew he'd speak well of me.
So when did you first get the inkling that Blackburn were interested, Chris? Because for me as a Norwich fan, this is a fascinating time, because there was so much criticism and heat on Robert Chase at the time. For Norwich fans, we were looking at Blackburn thinking, well, just go and do what they've done. And we could have won the Premier League if we'd have gone and spent that money and invested and pushed the team forwards. We were this close. So when did you know Blackburn were interested, and how did the whole thing play out from your perspective?
I signed a new contract for Norwich just before the Christmas, before I moved to Blackburn. And Robert Chase, you know, had told me privately, you know, we're going to keep this team together. Mike Walker isn't going anywhere. Hence, I signed a new contract. And then a couple of weeks later, Mike Walker went off to Everton, which was a huge, huge deal because, you know, Mike, arguably the most successful manager in Norwich City's history, the third place finish in the Premier League, where we had come pretty close. And then Ralph Fox moved. And that was Mike Walker leaving was a big deal. But then Ralph Fox, who was a brilliantly talented player, you know, and I had a good relationship with Ralph. And he was a big part of me doing well at Norwich in terms of our understanding and a combination play with each other. And I felt that Norwich had sort of lost their appetite. Now, you know, I think that many people viewed Robert Chase at that particular time as the villain, but I always thought deep down he had Norwich's best interests at heart. He couldn't compete with somebody like Jack Walker, of course. But then because Ralph Fox had gone, and there was interest from a lot of different clubs, in fairness, Manchester United had declared their interest. This was just into the new year. Liverpool, I think Roy Evans had taken over in charge at Liverpool. Arsenal were in for us. George Graham was manager there. Could have gone to play with Ian Wright. But the chance to go to Blackburn was too big. And it was then about agreeing a transfer fee. Manchester United would have paid £4 million. But in the end, two clubs had agreed to pay, which was, British record transfer fee at that time, £5 million. And that was Blackburn Rovers and Arsenal. And Robert Chase called a press conference, didn't he? Because he'd said, I think, I don't know how many weeks before, that I was going to be at the club next season at Norwich City. And if I wasn't at the club, then neither would he be. and he called that press conference, but and talked about testing the water. And if somebody would pay £5 million for me, then Norwich City would have to let me go. That in that press conference, a week earlier than the press conference, I'd signed for Blackburn Rovers. I'd gone up and signed for Blackburn Rovers, sat in Robert Call, the chairman's house. And so I knew I'd already gone, you know, so that was a little bit naughty from Robert Chase to do that. But the deal was already done. I'd signed for Blackburn Rovers. And essentially, I was a Blackburn Rovers player. But, you know, they were the team building stuff and the team ready to challenge Manchester United.
So Chris comes in, right? And it's not just any old signing. This is a 21-year-old. You were 21 at the time, weren't you, Chris?
Mm.
I think 20, and, you know, a British transfer record, smashing Blackburn's previous transfer record as well. I'm really interested in the role of a captain in a situation like this, because you've got the players that grafted the league below to get you up. You've got the players that have already been signed thinking, right, I'm now the main man. Then you've got someone else like Chris who comes in who then thinks the same thing because he's the guy that's come in breaking the British record. How did you and the manager and other people, Tim, sort of keep that ship steady? Because so many times we've seen dressing rooms just fall apart in this kind of situation.
I think it's from the leader, and the leader obviously was Kenny, and I think he was a good man manager. You know, he knew full well, as I did as well, not everyone could leave. You know, they can't make wholesale changes. I mean, they tried their best to do it. I mean, within a year and a half, you know, the whole squad was pretty much shook up. But the likes of Jason Wilcox, who was from the academy, Mark Atkins, who played an amazing part in the Premier League season, he was still there. So there was opportunity for people to survive. And the pressure was on the ones who were coming in, because we did all right, you know, and it was trying to get to the next level. But the boys have to come in and they have to hit the floor running, not only on the matches, but during training, they have to show and prove their worth. And it was, I can remember training be as feisty as I've ever seen at any football club I've ever been at, because it was almost like the old guard kicking the new. But when they realised that the new were as tough as they was, and they wanted to build their career and they wanted to go on and win, it got quite heated. And I think that competition really sets apart. I mean, if you speak to anyone and say, was we the most talented team in the world? Of course we wasn't. Man United were, you know, and there's teams around. Did anyone have a better team spirit than we did? Absolutely not. And I've said it. Oh, yes, I was captain. I wore the armband. Yes, everyone got told, but they also got told when they done well. And I think that stemmed from Kenny and the team spirit, what he had. And I think Chris would agree that the spirit was tough. It was a tough environment, but it was fantastic. I mean, it was cruel at times, but it was just the best. And we just pushed each other on just to inspire each other to be better than what we was. And there was the real belief of, you know what, they are the best team in the world, Man United, but we're coming and we're coming to get them. Mm-hmm. And I think they believed that. They started to believe that, because you saw a few cracks in Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, when he was talking, you know, because he can play the mind games with Kenny Dalglish as well. You know, certainly when we were pushing them close in the 94-95 season, and they were chasing us, and he was trying to say that, you know, it's a Devon lock now if Blackburn fall over, and Kenny just wasn't buying it. You know, he would have saw Kenny's reaction, because Kenny's been there and done it and won the Premier League, won everything. So it was that experience what took us over the line.
Does that resonate with you, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, what was pretty amazing about that Blackburn team is we, you know, we weren't a super experienced team. I don't think anybody had been there and won the Premier League other than the manager or the old First Division. Tony Gale had come in on a free, and he was probably the only one who you would deem as an experienced player. I think we had a very streetwise team, and I think Tim is right in terms of the brand of football which we played. You know, there's no doubt that we weren't the most attractive Premier League team which there has ever been, but we were streetwise. We knew how to win games. We knew you know, what we were effective at. You know, we were a smart team, you know, a streetwise team. And what people forget about that Blackburn Rovers team is, you know, when I first joined, and Tim will tell you because he was doing it for years before me, we were training on the local parks. They were shoveling dog's mess off the pitches, you know, when I first joined. You know, I was a record transfer fee. I mean, it was quite an odd experience because of all the money which the club had to then go and, you know, train on local pitches and what have you. But I think the spirit was an important thing, but I think the know-how, getting over the line and finding a way and playing in a way that everybody believed in. And I think that comes from the manager and the trust which everybody had in the manager. And in the difficult times towards the end of the season, where we just stumbled a little bit, that's when I thought Kenny's importance, you know, to the team was so vital. I think we were looking at him because, as I said, we weren't super experienced. We hadn't been the course and distance. Not anybody in the squad, you know, had won a Premier League. But that was the last of the 42-game seasons. And I think the other thing is, which people forget, and Tim mentioned, you know, Manchester United, but the two games against Manchester United, I'm not saying that that we were robbed against them twice, but we were absolutely robbed. I mean, the first game, Paul Warhurst scores a goal, and then Henning Berg got sent off with one of the worst decisions you know you've ever seen in the Premier League. And Eric Cantona slots the penalty, and they end up winning the game 4-2. And then at Old Trafford, we hadn't played particularly well at Old Trafford. Giggs wins a ball from Henning Berg, crosses it in. Cantona scores maybe 25 minutes ago. I can't remember what time he scored it, but it's quite a tight game. And then Tim headed the ball across in the last second. Alan Shearer headed the ball across in the last seconds. Diagonal ball, jumps over Roy Keane, heads it back, and Tim scores a brilliant header back across the keeper. And the Manchester United players weren't protesting about a foul on Roy Keane, but somehow, Alan Shearer was adjudged to have fouled Roy Keane. We end up losing the game. And that was the Devon Lock moment where I think Kenny came out after the game and, you know, was really strong and backing us. And that may have worked in our favour in terms of, blimey, you know, everything is against us this season. That's twice against Manchester United that this has happened. We really need to dig deep and get over the line.
Wow, there's so much to pick apart there. I'm interested in this sort of the way the spirit was created, Tim, because, you know, as Chris talks there, training on the local park, you know, let's be honest, you're in Blackburn. You're not in London. You're not in Manchester. You're not in Liverpool. You're in Blackburn. So there's that to take into account as well. And then there's these results against, you know, Man United, for example, as Chris talks about. It feels like all of those things individually, you can look at them and go, that made it hard. But it feels almost like they all worked together in your favour.
Absolutely. And I think Kenny used to say, and I remember it as if it was yesterday, he always used to say, it's not about facility, it's about people in it. And he's absolutely right. I mean, I've worked at one of the best training grounds in Tottenham, not what they have, but it is about the people. And it's not only about the playing people, it's about the staff. And he was very cautious and I think very, very shrewd in the staff, what he brought to the football club, not only on the playing side, but also in and around the place. And I'm not sure there was anyone who didn't feel they was part of the team, you know, from the lady who washes the kit to, you know, the girls who used to cook us our food. We used to go back and train to the main ground at first. And then they were building Pleasanton. And then we went through the process of building new stands there at Blackburn and changing in port cabins, you know, getting a bus to the other end of the pitch and walking out. You know, it was a disruption for us, but it wasn't ever allowed to be an excuse. Yes, it's a disruption for the away team as well. But we relished it. We didn't talk about it because we wasn't allowed to. I think if he allowed us to give us an excuse, then that is what we're going to use. It was nothing about that. It was just about preparation, always focus on the next game and get the job done. And listen, he never blew smoke up our backsides. Never. Never once did he do that. He's not that type of manager. But if he said nothing to you, you're probably doing well. I remember turning around sometimes, you know, because he was so clear on the direction of how he wanted to play. You knew if you played well or not. It was quite, it was not a lot of sophistication regarding the philosophy of how we played, but it didn't need to be because he just worked with the group he had and this is what he felt was the best system for us. The worst thing ever was when you looked across and Chris would experience it as well, and I certainly did many times. You look across at Kenny and he's just got his head down, like shaking his head. It's almost like as if
you... What, during the game?
Yeah, when you look across, you know, I used to... And then you've got the lightheartedness of Ray Hartford. And Ray used to... I mean, I tell my friends now and they can't believe that sometimes he used to come to the side of the pitch when we're playing well and we're overrunning teams and that. And he used to shout to me, Tim. And I'd go, what? He goes, stick a fork in them, they're done. I mean, that sort of banter is destroying for the rest of the opposition. He used to shout out, call a copper. I mean, the guy's banter was fantastic. But then when there was times to be told, we realised we had to be told. There was no airs or graces about this coaching side, this coaching format, what Kenny had. It was about this is the direction we're going. No one veers off the road, and this is where success is built. And you only got to look at the man and what he's achieved as a player and as a manager. If you were a fool not to believe it, and we were all on side, and then we had a little, there was a group, and it became larger and larger in the dressing room, who, if anyone knew come to the football club, they were told by us. So it was an easy policing job for Kenny in the end. Exactly what Sir Alex Ferguson had for a longer period at Man United with that little cartel of players.
So what would you say to new players when they arrived to explain to them what Blackburn were about?
Well, listen, the fans is the great thing. I think you always got to play to your audience, and they didn't expect sophistication. But what they did expect was graft and hard work and determination and sweat and blood for the team. And you only had to look at the players who were there, and the big signings like Chris, who's come in, and Alan Shearer, and you know the Batties. And I mean, when you talk about, I mean, Batty, I've just mentioned a name there. That is what he's all about. That is his game. I mean, that's just every day in training. But we trained as we played. We kicked each other more in training. The Friday before the games, Kenny used to pick a team. He used to play. And when I first got to the club, he was actually the best player. But you had Kenny picking a team and you had the opposition. So he would pick the two teams. You have an 8-a-side, and it was brutal, brutal. I mean, we're talking about a day before a game, but we played at 100 mile an hour. We had one pace in that side, and that was flat out. And that is how we trained. And they soon got used to it. It wasn't about just changing it and switching it on when it comes to the matches. The guys who come to the club, the new boys, were told in the dressing room, but it was easy to see. It wasn't about words. It was looking at how we trained. And they go, wow, this is intense. Yeah, they cried a little bit at first, but then they just become part of the family.
Jay, just something on Kenny as well. And, you know, I think Tim has, you know, explained the way Kenny was very, very well. Kenny used to shake his head at me in the warm-up, which was half a problem for me. But I thought that one of the biggest things about Kenny was, in the dressing room, he would say one thing to the players, but always publicly, he would go out and back the players, no matter how poorly he would play.
Yeah.
And, we had a great season. Our confidence was good, but there was the occasional blip that season. But publicly, I think that's a big thing, when your leader's actually backing the players and, you know, not being critical of them. And I think the players really respected him because of that, because he didn't hang them out to dry in public. And when we did slip at times towards the end of the season, he was the character keeping us going, really. You know, he was the strength.
And you've mentioned a few of the names there, and we can throw in, you know, the likes of Tim Flowers, Graham Lassow, Hendry in the team as well. I wonder how important it was that this was a team of really brilliant young British talent. Did that help to create an atmosphere as well?
Yeah, I think pretty much we looked around the Premier League. Most of the teams...
That matter, though, Tim, that they were British?
Not really, because I suppose, well, Hedinburgh was more English than me in the end. I mean, he come in...
I suppose what I mean is, like, I felt like a similar kind of play. You've gone around and just hoovered up similar kind of age and experience and nationalities, whether you all felt like, oh, we're on this journey together, like a real band of brothers type feeling.
Yeah, pretty much. I think, but most clubs around that time were stocked up with British talent. You know, so a little bit different now, or a lot different now. But certainly character-wise, I think there was a blend. It was a little nice cocktail. But I mean, certainly from the manager, it was look, this is his way, and this is how he needs to be. Mm-hmm. Rather now, I think the management styles has to be, I'm the manager, but I have to adapt to every individual player I've got. Whereas back then, it was about, because he was such a high-profile winner, it was about, this is what I want, guys. This is what I expect. If you don't do it, I'll go and get someone else to do it. And we had the finances to be able to do that. So, yeah, I think you're correct on the personnel, what he brings in, and the drive and the determination, what is expected, because that's what the fans want to see. And Kenny was very, I think he was very shrewd at that. And Chris is absolutely right. They're just little detail we give you in the dressing room. He would look at the opposition and he knew every player, didn't he? He'd come up individually, inside out, but he would come up individually and he'd say to me, I use one example where you say Rob Lee. He said that he would always turn on his outside of his right foot you know, when you're up against him, Tim, you look to turn. So sometimes he just sticks in your head, you know, you're just waiting for him to turn into you and nick the ball, you know. So, and he would say to Chris about centre-backs, this one, he doesn't like if you run him in the left-hand side. Mm. You know, he would just pick it. It was a knowledge and of a real football man who's gained that knowledge, not from a book, you know, not from learning. He's gained it from experience of being in the environment and smelling it, different environments at the right time, because he was such a winner and he played with a lot of different characters. If you look at that Liverpool side, were the best side for generations. The sophistication in the way they played, it wasn't too hard to coach. It was all about the Soonesses of this world, you know, the Ian Rushes, you know, the Alan Hansons. It was about them understanding what the manager wanted and taking it to the pitch. And I think I'm not suggesting we're anywhere near as good as them guys, because they're legends of the game. But I think in a little type of way, I think Kenny was trying to build something like he had experienced in his playing career.
It's funny, Jake, because I think that Kenny was a manager. All the players, and Tim's already touched on this, so I'm at risk of repeating what Tim said, but all the players were so in awe of Kenny because of what he's achieved as a player. And I always felt, you know, I wanted to please Kenny. And Kenny, I think most of the players felt that way. And it was about standards. And I suppose because Blackburn were spending money at that particular time, and, you know, they'd had the promotion and there was progress, I suppose there was a drive from within each individual that if you're not performing, you'll be at the side and you know, Jack Walker will buy somebody else. So I suppose in many respects, that really worked in our favour. And, you know, Tim's right. It was probably the only club I've ever been at where it was more ferocious in training, you know, that first season than it was in a lot of the games. And you know, that was what we were taught. Maybe that was what, you know, Kenny Dalglish had brought to the table, his experience as a player of winning titles and then as a manager, and taking that into Blackburn Rovers, building and buying players. But, you know, as we've seen over the Premier League years, it's not as easy as just buying somebody. You know, every component of that particular team has to fit. And you know, Kenny had a style and a way of playing. And I think also that season, people forget, Tim has mentioned David Batty. When Blackburn signed David Batty, that was a huge, huge deal. One of the best midfielders in the country. David Batty barely played a game that season. Mark Atkins, you know, Tim's mentioned, you know, had been part of the team which got promoted. But he was a, you know, big, big player for the team that season. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, we're getting on a bit now, but when people mention the Blackburn Rovers team, Mark Atkins is the one everybody sort of forgets. But, yeah, you know, within Blackburn, of course, that isn't the case.
I've always said he's the best midfield player I've ever played with.
Really?
As a partner. As a partner, he appreciated it. Yes, we had the success, but his appreciation of others and his knowledge of as what was expected of him was second to none. He's one of the best finishers in front of goal.
He
understood the game. He understood if I was in the box, we played 4-4-2, so it was like two. If I went to the box, he'd sit deep. You know, he wouldn't come running past me. His appreciation was following the ball. He adjusted his position accordingly to what the game needed. I just think he was a very good thinking man. I mean, couldn't run. He wasn't very quick. He wasn't aggressive. He was a good passer of the ball, but he was such a good team member, you know, and a good citizen. And he was the one who'd come out, along with Jason, come out of the championship. So, you know, you've got to give him a lot of credit for wanting to roll his sleeves up, wanting to be part of this journey, as Newcastle are going to see now. They can't all leave. Some of them are going to have to stay behind, and some of them will come to the top, like Mark Atkins did.
Kenny said Mark Atkins was the best finisher at the club, but I think that was tongue-in-cheek.
He said that to you, did he?
I think he said it publicly, because, I mean, it sort of had to be Alan.
I think so.
Alan had more chances.
Talking of Alan, how quickly did you and him develop that relationship that became so famous?
I think the way that I've always been better playing as a focal point. I played at Norwich City with Efe Nkuku and had a really good relationship because he'd run the other way. I'd gone into to Blackburn, and you know, Alan was the main man. I think in the first season, Alan signed for Blackburn. He'd had a knee injury around Christmas, Tim. You correct me if I'm wrong with this, and he still nearly won the Golden Boot that season. But he, you know, he didn't miss. I don't, I don't think it took too long to develop. I mean, from my point of view, in the early stages, you know, I'd gone up, I was a little bit in awe of Alan, and I didn't feel totally comfortable because essentially Alan was mates with Mike Newell, and he was traveling in every day with Tim Flowers and Mike Newell. And, you know, effectively, I'd gone in to take Mike Newell's place. But, you know, there was this perception that myself and Alan didn't get on, but that couldn't be furthest from the truth. We, you know, we got on fine. He lived in out at Formby. I used to live, you know, just on the outskirts of Blackburn. And that was the sort of thing, doing the rounds, that, we weren't great mates. But, you know, we always got on. And in terms of, you know, on the field, it, you know, is a pleasure to play with him, really. But he was a player who, you know, I think I worked well with. You know, I was, you know, essentially the focal point, and, you know, you leave your best finisher up the pitch. And I can't, that's that season, I can't actually really remember him missing a chance. And throughout his career, he just, you know, when I think of Shearer, he used to think right-hand side of the box, and he just used to ping things that low back left into the corner, so accurate. And he was brilliant in the air. He was brilliant in the air, and he wasn't the biggest guy, but he had so much power. But you look at the sort of spine of the team, you know, Hendry, Sherwood, and Shearer, a young team.
Flowers.
Yeah.
He was massive for us, especially with one game. I don't know if I'll tell you about the one game, and you tell Jake what it is.
Yeah, well, Newcastle, the VE day at Blackburn, when we'd started to wobble a little bit. Probably the best goalkeeping performance I think I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm not just saying that. And that was, I mean, even you'll remember his interview, Jake, where he came out and he used the word bottle about 35 times in 45 seconds. But, you know, people were questioning our bottle. You know, Sir Alex had talked about Devon Lock, but he made some incredible saves that night. And essentially that was the game which got us over the line. Alan scored a, you know, good header at the back post. And we had started to sort of wobble, but that's when you actually need individuals to step up and show their character and the quality. And Tim Flowers was probably the hardest trainer I think I've ever seen. You know, you talk about people deserving everything they got.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal in training. I don't think he can, you know, he can barely walk now. I think he's had both his hips done. But that was because of the way he trained. And it was those sort of, always like stories like that, because it's those tiny margins. You know, you think about some of his saves that night, and, you know, that's the difference. Somebody who puts everything into his training on the big occasions, the big nights, they get you over the line. And his display got us over the line.
And you know, when Leicester won the Premier League and they took people by surprise, was there an element of that with Blackburn Rovers the season when you won the title? People just underestimated you.
I think maybe, I always say it would never be done again, but credit to Leicester. I mean, it was incredible what they actually achieved, but they nearly got relegated the year before, you know, but we were gradually getting better. And like I said, there was that belief. And I think it was not only the belief in our dressing room and from our management team, but I think it also from Man United. I think they believed that we're going to be the real deal. And they were looking over their shoulder because we did push them so close the year before. So, yeah, a little bit of difference. Obviously, you know, not the most fashionable side. I think that's where the characteristics comes in with Leicester and Blackburn, but magnificent and equal amount of achievement there.
Do you know what, though, Jake? It's important as a football team to know what they are and to have that discipline and that belief in the way that that we played. And, you know, sticking to your beliefs is a, you know, a huge, huge thing in football. I think Manchester United fear this. I think they signed Andy Cole, didn't they? You know, ended up spending $7 million on Andy Cole. People talk about the Cantona incident at Crystal Palace. But these were all things that, as Blackburn players, we can't affect what happens, you know, at Manchester United. But I think they were certainly, you know, fearful of us. We were the challengers. I think in terms of mentality and belief at the start of the season, I think the gap was 8 points the previous season. But that game I talked about, I think that there was a belief within the Blackburn dressing room that it would be that season. Jack Walker, who was a meticulous planner, after the last game at Liverpool, I think Tim had said something along the lines of he'd planned for Blackburn to win the league the following season. Of course, that didn't happen. But it just, you know, it just felt right. We were a powerful team. We played to our strengths. And, you know, had things been different in those two Manchester United games, we would have won the league at a canter.
Let's talk then about a few specifics. Like, you got off to that brilliant start, didn't you? You dropped just 12 points before the new year. What are your early memories, Tim, of that, of the way the season began?
I think it was just about not getting carried away with it. We know how strong that the team down the road were and that they're always likely to come. And if we can get a lead, let's get the biggest lead we possibly could. We were being reminded every single day or every game by Kenny, it's all about the next one. It's not about where we are in the league now. It's about where we are in May. And just continually kept our feet on the floor. Didn't want to hear any talk later on the season about winning the title. We really didn't mention it as much as it's never. I couldn't get to sleep last month of the season because I felt that we were so close and the dream was so close and it could be taken away from us. And they were coming. They were coming hot. You know, they were off the bridle and they were flying and we had to keep our cool and we managed to do it. But I think we were just riding the wave, you know, early season, we were just steamrolling teams, you know, scoring heavily, felt like we had the firepower. Everyone seemed to be keeping fit at that stage. We knew there would be a bump in the road, but, you know, why there's no stress? We just had to keep it going, you know, and keep flying and keep our feet on the floor. And I think that's the key to it all.
Do you know, Jake, especially the home games, I used to go into the games at Ewood Park and, you know, on the way to the games, know we would win. And, you know, that probably doesn't sound, but it's just that belief. And the other thing which I really liked was, you know, we'd win a game and nobody would be too excited. It was, you know, about the process onto the next game and, you know, about being relentless and ruthless. And that, like Tim said, that's what was really drilled into us at the start. You know, I mean, you know, it's okay winning one or two games, but you have to keep that consistency. I think what was big was losing that Manchester United game. You know, we lost 4-2. Then I think the run we went on after that, and maybe we were, you know, there was anger because of the referee's decision, and we sort of felt, you know, things were conspiring against us. But the run we went on after that, where we had 12 or 13 games before we played Manchester United again, but we were relentless in that period. And that was the period when I think we were possibly at the best, where, you know, we felt wronged, went on that big, big run and showed great consistency. And it's runs like that which win your titles.
Yeah. And how did you react to things that were outside of your control at this time then? I mean, I'm thinking mainly of that famous kung fu kick at Crystal Palace from Eric Cantona. What was the reaction like in the Blackburn dressing room when you saw that, when you knew that he'd been banned? Because obviously that has a big impact on your season.
Oh, delighted. Delighted. I mean, he was special, wasn't he, Eric? You know, and he was a man for the big occasion. If ever they was going to need someone, even for them penalties where he never missed, you know, if they got that penalties in late on, if it was at Old Trafford, he was always going to roll it in. So to have him out of the way for a period of time, I thought he should have got longer. but to have the big man out of the way was huge, because I was thinking it was probably like taking Shearer out of our dressing room, even though they had like a lot of world-class players. But you don't, like I mentioned earlier, you don't like to lose any of your squad, you know, and you want to keep everyone fit and you want to keep them healthy. You don't want suspensions, you know, and then he's had this rush of blood and he's actually, you know, he's done something. And they had to come down, and I think Man United suspended him before he actually got the ban. But yeah, it was a huge, huge boost for us. Yeah, huge.
Do you know what? I agree with everything Tim says, but there's also a danger, Jake, that we could have become complacent because of his importance to Manchester United. But they had so many good players, you know, in their team. And, you know, as I say, they just signed Andy Cole for £7 million, who was a phenomenal striker. And they'd signed Andy Cole to get them over the line in the title race. So, you know, that had happened. That was out of our control. So it was still about our process, going out, grinding out games, playing the same way, having that really relentless mentality that, you know, let's not focus on Manchester United. You know, let's control things we can control. And we did that pretty well.
And then you have that period where you're 8 points clear on April the 20th, but you win the league by just 1 point. I mean, you know, you've been very honest, Tim, and said you couldn't sleep for the last month of the season in case it was taken away. Did you ever think that you'd blown it?
Oh, yeah. Do we ever think I'd blown it? We had such a lead, you know, and it was just, you know, deteriorating, and they were coming fast and hard, and it just felt, you know, you're always pessimistic. I think, when you're so close to something so great, you know, and that is the holy grail for us to win there. We gradually built, you know, fourth and second, and this is our year to be ahead, and so far ahead, and then it disappearing the lead. In building up to the games, you're looking at every game then. Rather than taking each game as it comes, you're looking at what they're doing. You know, you're spending nights watching their games and the stress of it as well. You know, you can't affect it, which makes it even worse when you're just looking at and you're praying for the opposition just to do something or the referee to help you out. And didn't seem to be happening. So in the end, it was just, you know what, it's just down to us, guys, and we just got to get on with it, and we got to do it. We just got to get over the line. But that fear of having that ripped away from us and going out and lifting that trophy was immense. And I'll be lying if I said that it wasn't. I was just cool about it, and I was assured that we would always go and do the job. Nah, there were so many doubts because we had, like Chris has said earlier, we'd never got over the line before. You know, none of us have got over the line, and it really is about that. We saw how many years Liverpool have tried to get back to lifting that trophy. And when they actually do, they finally have a swagger about them. And then they built, you know, and they've gone on. But, yeah, I mean, now even talking about it, I mean, it just makes my palms sweat to think that it was so close to getting ripped away.
And what are your memories of that final day then, Chris? You know, you go, it was against Liverpool. It was Kenny Dalglish. Liverpool fans wouldn't want Man U winning the league. I mean, the whole thing was odd, wasn't it?
Yeah, the whole day. Just going back, you know, a little bit. We had a really damaged. I think the defeat where we really started to wobble was we lost to Manchester City, who were in the relegation zone at Ewood Park. That was pretty unthinkable. I think that put a big dent in our confidence. And I think United doing what United did. I can't remember who they played off record, but they always seemed to find a way. And they, you know, they were coming up. I think I'd scored a goal at QPR, which put us 8 or 9 points clear with 6 or 7 games to go. And I thought that was it. I thought, you know, the way we'd performed all season, that they're not going to come back from that. But because of the way they were performing and getting on a roll, I mean, you know, we lost to Manchester City. Then I think we edged a game against Crystal Palace 2-1. Tim's talked about the VE victory at Ewood game against Newcastle, which was so huge, the one before the end of the season. And, you know, Tim Flowers, everybody was pumped up. But then that's where you're looking around the dressing room, and I'm the same as Tim. It's fear. It is fear because you're in front for so long. You know, if you're sneaking up on the rails and you nick it at the death, you know, it feels great. But it's, you know, what if we don't get over the line? Will this ever happen again? Will I ever win a Premier League again? Will I ever get that, or will we as a team ever get a better chance? And it's the fear of having that taken away from you. And then, of course, the Liverpool game, it was really odd going into the game because of Kenny Dalglish and the conspiracy theories. Liverpool hate Manchester United. They're going to chuck the game. It didn't affect our approach at all because there was no way in a million years that Liverpool were going to chuck the game. It's just, you know, it's not in any professional player's ethos really to think like that. And, you know, they were, you know, a good team. They didn't have anything to play for, but they weren't going to, you know, roll over and let us win the game. Remember driving to the stadium, just so nervous, you know, really, really nervous, adrenaline pumping, just thinking, and, you know, we just need to find a way of getting over the line, and Alan scores early. Then we're aware of what's going on at Upton Park because, you know, of the crowd, and you hear the cheers, and, you know, we're thinking, oh, well, we're all right. But then, you know, as we well know, the games can turn quickly. And, you know, getting into the second half, I mean, it was unbearable. I think I missed a good, you know, pretty good chance, and saw Tim shaking his head, and then Alan missed the chance. And I mean, and then Liverpool get back into the game when all John Barnes scores. And the Redknapp free kick, in many respects, it didn't matter because of the way the sort of maths were panning out. That, you know, that was irrelevant. His goal, that was when there was a 30-second period, or I don't know how long, it felt like eternity, where we were just waiting to hear about, you know, whether West Ham had held on against Manchester United. I mean, it felt like, you know, half an hour, but it was about 30, 40 seconds where, we were relying on something else, something we hadn't really needed to do all season. And then, you know, we heard the roar of the crowd, and you know, it was relief. It wasn't jubilation, but because of, you know, we talked about, had we lost it and you've been so far in front, it was like a huge, huge relief just going through the body. And it was only really days and weeks after, and, you know, even now where you think, blimey, you know, that was special. But it, you know, it didn't feel like that at that particular time. The emotion was, oh, you know, let's breathe again.
Tim?
I'm still on the relief one. I've not got over the relief one. I've not had time to celebrate because I still been. I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible. And Chris is absolutely right. I mean, we knew we looked across and we saw Kenny and Ray, and they embraced, and because of the streetwise nature of our manager, we knew no one is, you know, we were taking throw-ons and they were saying Man United are getting beaten, and then joking with us that Scouse humour what they have, you know, and winding us up. But we knew they weren't pulling the wool over the top man's eyes. So as soon as we saw that broad smile off the two of them and jumping around, we knew we'd finally done it and got over the line. And we spent the last minute and a half of that game walking around. I mean, it was just didn't matter. We'd been there, we've been course and distance, we've done it, we've actually achieved it, got over the line. The result didn't matter in the end, and it was just euphoria. And the relief is the biggest word, really, but euphoria afterwards, you know, just jumping around and probably too much, as in, you know, now you see like Guardiola and certainly Sir Alex Ferguson, yeah, they enjoyed their moment, but it was almost like right on to the next. It was I had a feeling of, well, we've done it. So not like when I look back, if I have any regrets, it's like, well, we've done it. Now we gotta do it next year. Now we're going to do it. But unfortunately, the foundations wasn't in there for us to be able to do that. And I think that's something what I think Jack would regret. I mean, he's obviously, his goal was to win the Premier League. But you know what? Sitting here now, and Chris will say the same, and all our players, it'd been nice to have done it again and again and again. So it's the only tinge of disappointment for me. But just that day was magnificent. You know, you have your families there to see it happen, and you know, just seeing. I mean, I see them pictures of them crowd now, and them some of them black. You can pick out family members in them shots, and the tears, you know, and the emotion of, you know, they're living it as well as the players, and they know how close we are, and for us to finally go over the line was just magnificent.
You share Tim's tinge of regret, Chris, that Blackburn didn't push on, because this amazing thing happened. You built this incredible team. You won this remarkable title. And it wasn't too long after that the whole thing faded away. And here we are, you know, all these years later, and Blackburn just can't even get back into the Premier League, let alone win the thing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, on a professional level, you know, what Jack Walker was, you know, was building, and, you know, Tim's right, we couldn't quite get the foundations in place. I think a big deal was Kenny, you know, going upstairs to the director of football role, you know, and it was never going to be easy for Ray Harford, who was, you know, Kenny's right-hand man, his coach, a player that a coach the players really, really respected. But then to move up into the managerial role, to not really strengthen that summer. I mean, Sir Alex was always famed, you know, when he'd won a title, going strong again, bringing in, you know, a marquee player, if you like. We possibly didn't do that. I think the way I look at it now is, you know, I look at it differently, the way that the club is. You know, you see games on Ewood Park over the last few seasons. I've been back myself to cover games, and the stands are empty. You know, a lot of the stands are empty. It's a different club. It's a different ownership. It has a different feel. I mean, I loved living in Norwich, being brought up in Norwich. You know, when I used to ask people about Blackburn, what was Blackburn like? People said it rained a lot in Blackburn. But I loved my time up there. I had five great years. I think it's sad what has happened to the club, you know, subsequently. And, you know, I hope that eventually they can find a way back into the Premier League. I think it'll be really, really difficult. But I take great pride from that particular era. But, you know, I think that, you know, Tim's absolutely bang on in terms of, as a player, you want to be greedy. You want to go again. I think on the flip side of that, you think about how good that Manchester United team were and what Sir Alex was building, and that United team through the 90s and, you know, longer than the 90s were the team to beat under Sir Alex Ferguson's reign. So, you know, in many respects, I look at that season and think it was pretty incredible that that Blackburn Rovers team, which Jack Walker built and Kenny Dalglish, you know, really grew, won the Premier League. And look back at that, and think, you know, with great, great pride on the way we performed that season. You know, we were a band of brothers.
You know what? I think people actually forget what an incredible story Blackburn winning the league was. Hopefully that's kind of uncovered some of that story for you, particularly for some of our younger listeners. But most incredible of all was that final day, which saw United lose the title because they only managed to draw 1-1 at West Ham. In the home dugout that day was Harry Redknapp.
I think it was one of the great days in English football, one of the great days in Premier League history, because it was a day that showed the honesty of our game. You know, everybody thought that Liverpool would lay down and let Blackburn beat them, because Kenny Dalglish, a legend going back to Liverpool, they don't like Man United, Liverpool. So really, they for the first time in their lives, the Liverpool fans would have been quite happy to lose that day if it meant Man United not winning the league, Kenny winning it. And we were playing Man United, and everybody thought, well, we'd roll over and get well beat by Man United anyway. But both results didn't work out that way. Both teams, Liverpool had a real go and won the game and beat Blackburn. And we scraped the draw with Man United, even though they battered us second half. We hung in there. I remember putting another centre half on with 15, 20 minutes to go and playing with back six. And I think Alex wasn't best pleased with my tactics that day, but listen, we all want to win. I don't care what game it is. We wanted to get a positive result, and a draw at home to Man United that day was a great result for us. And obviously it cost them the title.
Over at Anfield, Blackburn were playing against a Liverpool side whose crowd were keen to hand their hero Kenny Dalglish the title over their hated rivals United. In the home team that day was Steve McManaman, who had no such thoughts.
In all honesty, it was just to win the game. I wasn't interested in Manchester United winning the league. I had no interest in whatsoever or Blackburn win the league. I wanted to win the game, which we did, and we actually played very well against a good Blackburn team. And that was all I thought about. I didn't want to think about the other game. I wasn't interested at all. We were down, I think, weren't we? I think we were 1-0 down. We responded very well. Redknapp scored the second with that free kick, which sort of perplexed most of the crowd, I think, because they didn't know whether to cheer or shout at him. But I'm almost certain that I celebrated like mad because we went 2-1 in the league, because it was important that we won the game. And I wanted to finish the season on a high as well. So I couldn't care less about Kenny Dalglish and Blackburn at that particular time, even though Kenny was my first manager and I adored him. I had no interest at all about Alan Shearer and Tim Sherwood lifting the trophy, because we couldn't have won anything at that point, of course, at the end of May, and we weren't challenging for the league title. So I presume most Liverpool fans, as you do in the 90s, were wanting to stop, you know, the rise of Sir Alex Ferguson and the players. So I think there must have been a bit of, you know, love and hate, or, you know, wanting the team to fail and let Kenny win it. You know, not necessarily let Blackburn win it. The Liverpool fans are probably thinking, let Kenny win it and another title for him. And, you know, I think there was an admiration for Blackburn and Alan Shearer and Tim Sherwood and Jason Wilcox, you know, those type of players. David Batty, I certainly liked them. And, you know, you liked what Jack Walker was doing. So, yeah, if you're not going to win it yourselves, you wouldn't have minded that Blackburn team winning it, because they played the right football. And, of course, Alan Shearer was an absolute superstar centre forward.
Liverpool didn't have anything to play for at the end of that season, despite having one of the most talented teams in the league. Their 90s team often gets a lot of stick, but there was more than meets the eye. We'll hear more from Steve next time on the Premier League Storybook. Chapter 3 is the Spice Boys.
BT Sport Pods.